since we're here and I'm doing this interview with you, I should take the example to pose to you something that gets posed to me quite a bit, both from some of the youth who are coming forward, but also from some people who've been around a while, maybe some people who had been around, dropped off, regained some interest. And one question that people always raise to me a lot is, how do you stay on the revolutionary road? How do you sustain on this? And they're not raising it to me to speak for the organization, although, you know, what keeps me as an individual on the revolutionary road is definitely related to the organization that I've been a part of, you know, for decades and all like that. But they're also raising a question that has a personal aspect to it. So I just wanted to take the opportunity to pose that to you and see what your thoughts would be in relation to it.
Well, I think the most important thing is that is actually what we've been hammering at a lot here, which is the question of, you know, our ideology. You know, when you're, you know, in American society, or, you know, if you've grown up in American society, you're always bombarded with, you know, sort of an anti-theoretical bent, you know, American pragmatism. Whatever works is all you need to worry about. Whatever works is true. Whatever gets you ahead is as good as the truth, if not the truth, so on and so forth. You know, so it's especially in a society like this, it's, you know, that it's a real uphill battle to actually keep grounded in, you know, our Marxist-Leninist-Maoist ideology. You know, I mean, it's a that, you know, because of anti-theoretical, you know, notions that are constantly promoted anyway, and also because obviously our ideology of MLM, it goes completely up against and there's a rupture with everything that's promoted and pumped out continually. But I think that's the most fundamental thing. I know back in the 60s, people used to say to me, well, you know, you're very ideological, but they meant it in a negative way. You know, like, you know, it isn't that they could say that, you know, I wasn't actively involved at that time, you know, because I was, but they would say, you know, almost you're very ideological, and you could have substituted too ideological for very ideological. But I know my experience and experience generally has shown that, you know, that having a really deep ideological grounding and continuing to deepen that grounding is crucial to being able to, you know, to understand what's actually happening in all the twists and turns. You know, I notice right now that the Bush administration is trying to break out of the ABM treaty, you know, the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, but ideologically they like to promote ABM, anything but materialism. You know, and they get people into all kinds of idealist notions and looking, you know, like I try to touch on one of them earlier, like, you know, you can do anything you want if you try hard enough, or, you know, one truth is good as another truth, you know, or my experience, you know, is just as valid as your experience, meaning, you know, there's no way to unify those experiences in order to get an actual understanding of the truth underlying them, so on and so forth. This is pumped at people all the time. Or the problem in society is, you know, people are greedy, or the problem is human nature, or the problem is that, you know, you have bad leaders, or the problem is that leaders automatically turn bad. All these things which are divorced from the underlying material reality, you know, the actual foundations and contradictions that, you know, underlie society and you know, give rise to the dynamic forces of society is ignored or you know, glossed over, and all these superficial expressions or incorrect notions are anything, like I said, anything but materialism, you know, to understand what are the actual motive forces in both what happens in society and also how people think. You know, where do people, you know, like Mao said, you know, where do correct ideas come from? You know, they fall out of the sky, or do they come from social experience? And where do incorrect ideas come from? You know, they come from society too. You know, people's ideas are a product of their social experiences and also what's promoted, you know, at every turn in the educational system, for the churches, whatever. You know, we can't make revolution because people are all, you know, evil, you know, by nature, and only by taking up religion can they curb their evil nature. Or we can't make revolution because, after all, the fate of everything is in God's hands, which raises the question of the fate of everything in God's hands. Why don't you just go to bed and do nothing? You know, but actually people can't do that and don't do that, but they still, these notions get raised all the time, you know, these what we call idealist notions, the sense that what really is the foundation of things is not the underlying actual material reality, underlying social conditions, But what goes on in people's heads, or what goes on in the minds of great people or great men or whatever. All these kind of things are, and it, you know, the struggle to actually continually, you know, not only to grasp initially, but to continually deepen your grasp of, you know, the materialist and dialectical world outlook and of MLM as a whole, and to continue applying that to all the complexity of reality and all the different spheres, and to all the changes that have gone on in the world, you know, in the terms of the political struggle and the advance and then the setback of the revolution, all that, the key thing underlying all that is actually taking up and applying MLM. But of course, it's not a matter of just doing that off on your own somewhere. You know, if you just try to do that on your own, you're going to become isolated and your understanding of the world is going to become restricted and eventually turn from being more or less correct to being incorrect. You know, it's only by being part of the ongoing process of changing the world and understanding it more deeply in that context, and doing that as part of a collectivity of people, you know, in particular in the, you know, in the case of the U.S., part of our party, you know, which systematically sets out to apply that ideology in line and to learn from it. Only in that context are you going to be able to keep yourself grounded and not be totally thrown off by, you know, very real twists and turns and sudden eruptions and changes in the courses of history and of world events. So I'd say that's the most, you know, most fundamental thing, essential thing. I mean, okay, there are a lot of other things that go into it.
Okay, well, just in response to what you've said so far, I mean, and this view that people used to raise about you're very ideological, which sounded like they were saying you're too ideological. I know for myself, I'm glad that you're as ideological as you are, you know, not just, I mean, and there's a personal aspect to that too, and I might raise something here which you don't remember, but it's something that I'll remember, I have never forgotten and probably will never forget, and that is, because in general you've helped me quite a bit with the firmness and forcefulness of your stand on these burning questions, and there was one time in particular where I'm really glad that I had a chance to get into some things with you, and that was back in the 70s, around some of the questions that were up in the revolutionary movement then about, you know, what direction to take in terms of the struggle against national oppression. And I was back in the Black, I was in the Black Workers' Congress back then. This was before the party was formed.
Yeah, I remember this very well, by the way, but go ahead.
Okay. We were taking the wrong stand on some of these questions. In fact, related to some of the stuff that you've been talking about before this, we were raising the thing that leadership, you know, in the revolutionary movement and in the Revolutionary Party should be based upon one's nationality and not one's line, and different things like that. And I remember just one night while the struggle was brewing, I was in New York City and needed to find somewhere to stay and only knew some comrades in the RU up there, so I gave them a call, and they said, sure. They hesitated, but then they said, sure, come on over, and it turned out to be somewhere that you were. And instead of sleeping that night, which was what my plan was, we ended up staying up all night and talking about some of the questions that were up, and, you know, we started out coming from hostile positions, but struggling them out and struggling, you know, I know I was putting out the best of my understanding, and it seemed like you were too, but at the same time, we seemed to both be listening to each other, and through the course of that, you actually addressed what I was saying and showed me where, you know, while I was looking at this in terms of here's how to advance the struggle to liberate Black people and liberate all oppressed people, you were actually showing me that if my goal was what I said it was, then the political positions that I was advancing were off target. And, you know, it took you hours to do it, because we did end up being up about all night, as I recall.
Yeah, I do remember this very well.
But you actually made quite a bit of headway and won me away from, you know, some wrong views that I was taking at that point. So just on this point of you being too ideological, I say those people were way off base with that, and that the firmness and the forcefulness of your stand on that particular question and many other, you know, crucial questions for the revolutionary movement have been very important for the proletariat in this country and around the world.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good example of the exchange you're talking about is a good example of like how our methods of work should be and how people ought to approach things. You know, when you, as I said earlier, when you say you're a vanguard, doesn't mean you're proclaiming that you're better than everybody else or that everybody has to just fall in line behind you unquestioningly. It means you're taking up a certain responsibility. And you know, and part of the responsibility is to recognize that at any given time, there are certain things, certain principles you have to stand on and fight for. But at the same time, you have to be open to learning from other people and from experience generally. You know, and that's one of the most difficult things to handle, is how to stand on principle, but also be open to, you know, considering the fact that you might be wrong about something. Even something you hold to be is a really crucial matter of principle. You know, because on the one hand, you can just kind of waffle all over the place and not stand on it firmly for anything. You know, or on the other hand, you can be rigid and dogmatic and not be open to learning and not be willing to recognize where you might be wrong. And life is just much more complex than that. And you know, the world, the universe is just, you know, much more complex and ever changing. We're never going to be able to really, you know, engage it and continue learning and deepening our ability to change things. You know, if we have a kind of rigid stand, or on the other hand, if we just don't stand on anything. You know, so that's the tricky thing. Is one of the things that's mentioned, for example, in the Declaration of the RIM, you know, the Revolutionary Internationalist Movement, which we've also spoken to, is the need to correctly handle the relationship between standing firmly on and applying principle as you can understand it at a given point, but creatively applying it and not dogmatically applying it. And what goes along with that is, you know, creatively applying means being willing and open to, you know, to learn, you know, being open to learning, being willing to reconsider questions, even ones you thought have been settled for a long time, if reality throws forward, you know, new challenges which cause you to see that maybe some things you held as, you know, dear as bedrock principles, you know, maybe are not 100% the way you thought they were. This happens in every sphere of knowledge and endeavor, because the human knowledge never ends, it keeps developing. And the process of changing the world is constantly encountering new challenges. So I think that methodology of standing on what you think and struggling for, but being open, is actually in accord. It's not a way to be diplomatic. It's actually in accord with our world outlook and methodology. It's actually in accord with materialism and with dialectics, which tells us there is objective reality, but it's constantly changing, and that it's possible to know things, but you don't know all of them at any given time, and you'll never know all of them at any given time. So I think that's an important methodological point, too.
Yeah, and it actually seems to me that being a part of a vanguard, because in the correct sense, this party is the vanguard of the proletariat in this country, being a part of this vanguard has been an important part of, you know, personally, I know what has sustained me on the revolutionary path, because this is a party that has the ability, you know, it doesn't give up on principle, but it also can meet new challenges and figure out, you know, how to deal with things that, you know, you can't have, you didn't have in the playbook already, in a certain sense. This was a new one coming at you. And you have to figure out, all right, well, what does this mean? Let's investigate the reality. Let's come to understand it and figure out how we as revolutionaries need to approach it. And that's been an important part of what sustained me, because, you know, when people ask me this question of, well, how did you stay on the revolutionary road? I often have the feeling that they're raising what was special about you that kept you going when all these other people fell along the wayside. And, you know, I've never felt special in that kind of sense, that there was some way that I was better than all of the other people who came forward, you know, back when my generation, you know, rocked this system back on its heels with revolutionary struggle. It did seem as if what we got involved in to deal with back then, in terms of the oppression and exploitation of people in this country and around the world, things like the Vietnam War, that was a big motivating factor for us, that those things stayed in effect. And since they were still in effect, we had to continue the struggle to deal with them. And then the other part to that was that I was able to hook up with and become part of revolutionary organization and the Revolutionary Communist Party that had an understanding of how we could lead the masses in going up against and ultimately defeating imperialism here in the belly of the beast. So connected to the fact that what we were trying to deal with and wipe out was still out there and in effect, but also the vision of how that could be done, a way in which we could in fact triumph in that struggle. And it was that combination that was really the key, I think, to me staying on the revolutionary road, that thing of, you know, seeing the oppression and the exploitation, knowing it needed to be dealt with, but also being a part of a vanguard that had a vision, a plan, a strategy, and the leadership for taking that on and ultimately triumphing. I mean, that's the thing that, you know, has kept me going on this path.
Yeah, well, I think this last point you're bringing up about being part of a vanguard is very important, because besides all the basic points we talked about, you know, in terms of ideology and revolutionary program, it's also a fact that it's through the party that, you know, people who were within the party but working in one particular sphere, or people who are in a leadership position, you know, in particular, actually get refreshed with a living sense of what's going on among the masses of people and how the oppression is coming down on them, and, you know, and the horrors they're going through, and their desire for change, even if they can't spontaneously on their own formulate it into a revolutionary line or program or understanding. These things come back to us through the channels of the party. You know, I know even in the situation that I've been in, this has been a constant source of revitalizing me and you know, deepening my own dedication as well as understanding. But, you know, you get a living sense from all the work of the party, and through the newspaper is one key way, but also through the reports that come through the internal channels of the party. You get a real living sense of different sections of the masses and how this is affecting them, and the fact that they need and are, you know, crying out in various ways for radical change. Again, even if they don't understand that on their own, is the need for revolutionary change in the way the party understands it. But the fact that their lives cry out and their conditions cry out and their struggles, you know, are brought forth, you know, to deal with this oppression, that's a very important factor in keeping you going too, because you get a living sense, in other words, of the mass line. You get a living sense of what it means when we take our, you know, the lines we develop, the policies, the program out to the mass of people, and also what we get back from the mass of the people, not just directly in response to that, but in terms of their overall life conditions and their views on things and the ways in which they're spontaneously struggling and so on. And then we can add to that the whole dimension of the rim, you know, the international movement, and the fact that through the rim we get a living sense of that as well. You know, even if it's more indirect in the direct channels of the party, you know, the RCP itself, we still get a living sense of what this means for masses, millions and millions and millions of people, hundreds of millions, you know, throughout the world, even, you know, on all continents, you know, throughout the world, and how their conditions also, you know, cry out, you know, and demand a radical transformation of society and the world. I think this is a big part too of, if you aren't part of a party, you know, if you aren't part of a vanguard, and in addition to that, there being the whole international dimension, if it weren't for those things, I don't think we could have such a living sense in our ideological line, in our grasp of it, in our sense of the vitality of that wouldn't be nearly as great either.